This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
You know, it's an interesting process. You know, we got a lot of different guys that need deals, and some guys that are going to be in line for some big raises. So, kind of a wait and see game. I'm not talking about my kind of raise. I'm talking about somebody else's.
Well, we know that Andrew Kopp is in line for a raise.
Where's my raise?
You're not getting a raise. The question is, does he get that raise from an arbitrator, or does he get that raise from the Winnipeg Jets? 24 hours from now, his arbitration hearing is scheduled to take place. The numbers have been exchanged. Will a deal be consummated? We will find out very quickly. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, joined in studio by my colleagues, Ezra Ginsberg and Dave Minuk. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter at Illegal Curve. Send us your thoughts. Send us your comments. You can also do so via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. As we mentioned.
Likewise.
That's good. Nice to see you, Ezzy. Dave, nice to see you. Nice bright and early. The AM PM caught you, or was it the...
Yeah, we had the first time I've ever had that happen.
Yeah.
My alarm didn't go off this morning.
So fortunately, your driver showed up and knocked on the window to get you.
I had a porter show up, and I heard this incessant tap, 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 tap.
I think it's the first time that I've ever had to actually get out of my car and knock on your door, because you're very punctual.
No, I know. That's why...
Like, when I text you that I'm 5 minutes away, like, you're ready to go. So today, I knew that something was up.
There was an incident.
There was an incident, but nice to see that you guys did make it a little bit under the wire, just barely.
Hey, we still managed to grab some food for the show. And
let me put it this way. If you guys walk in without these donuts, just turn around and walk right back out.
Well, the best was, all I could think about was, we kept making all the stops. It didn't matter that the show was coming up. We kept making all the stops.
We need to have sustenance.
Anyways, let's get started with Andrew Kopp and the Winnipeg Jets. They exchanged their numbers with regard to an arbitration hearing yesterday. That hearing set to take place tomorrow unless a deal can be reached. The Jets offered 2 years at a slight raise, up to a $1.5 million per season. Andrew Kopp and his representative, you know him as Kevin Overhart.
Is he related to Kurt?
So they meant Kurt Overhart. Kurt Overhart. I said it and it didn't sound right. Kurt Overhart, 1 year at $2.9 million. So you can see that there is a $1.4 million gap between the two numbers. We also know that if it does go to an arbitration hearing and the ruling comes down.
1.4.
$1.4 million gap between the two. No, $1.4 million gap between the two numbers. But we do know as well that if it does go all the way through the hearing and no agreement is reached before the arbitrator hands down the ruling, it will be a two-year deal. So how that works...
And I'm going to guess $2.2 million.
Well, if the arbitrator decides to split the cost, certainly. The way it works, I just want to explain... Because the player chose to go to salary arbitration, the team then has the option of saying, okay, you're going to either get a 1 year deal or a 2 year deal.
Right.
The Jets said, we want a 2 year deal if this arbitration process goes all the way through to its completion.
And that's preferable, right? Because you look back last summer and, you know, Jacob Trouba signs the 1 year deal in arbitration. Or I guess it was awarded.
Yes.
But you know that you're going to be in the same situation next year, right? So this is ideal.
I'll tell you why.
For both sides, I believe.
I'll tell you why I disagree with you.
Well, certainly ideal for the Jets.
Well,
because you have him under control for one more year.
Yeah, but then he's right at then when this contract expires, he's a pending unrestricted free agent.
That's why last week we were talking about the possibility that Kopp signed a 3 or a 4 year deal, right?
Right.
So I think that's in an ideal world. I agree with you because now Andrew Kopp is going to be closer to UFA status. And, you know, if you look at the numbers, guys, and Craig Custance, if you're an Athletic subscriber, I mean, you look at the numbers and the amount of players that go to salary arbitration. If a player goes to salary arbitration, the likelihood of them leaving after that contract expires is obviously increased, right? So you look at Jacob Trouba as a great example, or, you know, Cody Ceci, he's now a member of a different team, right?
Toronto Maple Leafs,
right? Yeah. So yeah, and he was awarded. He went to arbitration. So the reality is, I mean, if this does go to arbitration, and there always is the possibility, guys, that there's a last minute deal. I mean, it could happen while we're live on air here.
True. The only problem is that Kevin Overhart.
Thanks, Dave.
Basically,
keep digging that knife in. I appreciate it.
Told guys like Weber and Mike McIntyre that they anticipate that they'll get to the hearing.
Yeah, I mean,
quote. I believe the exact quote is, "We're looking forward to the hearing."
Yeah, that's
which,
what
by the
said.
Way, I said should have been played with ominous sounding music.
We are going to arbitration and look forward to it. That was what Kurt Overhart said. Like you said to Ken Weeb yesterday. Now that can just as easily, if they find the
of
number.
Of course, as I said on illegalcurve.com, cheap plug. But I said that
your company, man,
it wouldn't be shocking if they continue to negotiate, obviously, but it would be
shocking if they didn't negotiate.
Well, yeah. Well, and that's the thing, right? You mentioned $2.2 million, and all Jets fans now, I mean, everybody can go to Cap Friendly, and obviously Cap Friendly is a great resource. We use it all the time, daily, if not weekly, right? And you can see Andrew Kopp is around $2 to $2.5 million. If it's a 3 or 4 year deal, then he's around three.
Wild had him at 2.1 right. for a two-year deal.
Exactly. And then it goes up if it's a 3 or 4 year mm-hmm. deal, right? So we talked about that last week. But, you know, when you look at this situation, I mean, the Jets aren't lowballing Andrew Kopp. You obviously come in at the lowest number that you possibly can. But the Jets, you know, Chevy, Larry Simmons, they know what Andrew Kopp is worth. They know he's a $2 million to $2.5 million player. Mm-hmm. This is just a process you have to go through. And it's unfortunate, I think, because, you know, going back to our conversation last week, you know, Andrew Kopp to me is such a versatile player, such a great player. I mean, that's a word, versatile, that you hear thrown out so many times with a guy like Andrew Kopp, but it really is true. And I would have no problem even if the Jets went 5 years. Like, I really wouldn't. I think he's that valuable. And the reality is, it's all about numbers and it's all about finding value, right? Bob McKenzie's talked about that so many times, you know, when you're talking about Mitch Marner, and that's probably the reason why he's not going to sign until September. I know you want to get into that later, but
later in the show.
Where's the value? If you're paying him more than Austin Matthews and you're paying him just as much as Don Tavares, I mean, it's about numbers. You just can't find value. So that's why you go to arbitration.
Let's go back to Andrew Kopp, because I think the reason why, I think Kopp and Overhart are probably looking more for a 1 year deal, maybe a 2 year deal if it goes all the way through arbitration, is because they hear all the reports, they see all the reports, and they saw Andrew Kopp's numbers for the latter half of last year.
Yep.
And they say this is a guy who, you know, had better offensive numbers than he's had at any other point in time in his career. And this season, if, you know, he ends up playing in a more offensively inclined role, which you've heard talk about and which we'll talk about next segment, sort of the role that we think Andrew Kopp is best suited for the team in the 2019-20 season. They're saying, well, maybe he's going to have even better numbers. So why are we going to sign a 3 or a 4 year deal based on the numbers that he's already put up when we think with an expanded opportunity, you know, we'll sign him to a 1 year deal. He'll have an expanded opportunity. Maybe he takes advantage of that opportunity and then he can cash in because he's got more favorable numbers to which to work with in terms of a negotiation.
So you're saying he should be going Kevin LeBanc style and betting on himself.
Yeah. No, I don't know that he would go 1 year, $1 million.
Well, he did at the end of the season presser say something about, it was asked about that, and he was talking about, well, I don't know if that means a hometown discount. He goes, I don't even know what that would mean.
Yeah, because, I mean,
which I'm sure Kurt Overhart was not happy about.
Well, everyone
never used the word discount.
Yeah, everyone knows the LeBanc contract isn't what he's going to sign for.
No,
he's coming
off
that, but
of course.
He's probably thinking to himself, if I want a 1 year, $2 million deal.
No, I agree with you, Drew.
I'm going to put up 35 points. No, or I'm going to put up 40 points.
I agree. I think that he envisions an opportunity here in Winnipeg that, with an expanded role, his point production will increase, and as a result, his contract. Yeah, and I agree. I think that's why if you're Andrew Kopp and you see you are looking forward, because obviously a lot of this is based on what you've done previously, but if you're forward thinking and you're thinking to yourself, okay, with an expanded role, what is my opportunity here in Winnipeg? Then you think, okay, well, I'll take this 1 year deal and then I'll really earn my next payday on that next contract. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, again, he doesn't, it's not like he would be a UFA, but the reality is he would still have a better position because, of course, based on the year, he's likely to have more points, more better numbers for which he could say to the Jets, look at what you're going to get if you sign me to a 3 or 4 year deal.
Right. And it obviously makes sense when you file to ask for the 2 years because you're going to get paid more for that extra year, right? If they would have filed for 1 year, I mean, you're talking about what, a possible $500,000 difference? that's a half $1 million more, right? He'd be probably be around, what would he be around? I don't know, 1.7, 1.8, 1.9. If you go 2 years, then you're getting close to, we talked about evolving wild, you know, 2.2, 2.3, whatever we're talking about here, guys. I mean, and it's unfortunate that at this time of the year, you start to, you know, break down $100,000 or $200,000. But as we know, the NHL is a business, and the Jets are, for the first time ever, going to be a team that's at the ceiling of the salary cap, right? Because you talk about Neil Pionk. I mean, we don't expect Neil Pionk to get a huge raise. And obviously, there's always the chance, guys, that he goes to arbitration, or at the very least, they file, right? But, you know, you're talking about Jacob Trouba also. It was getting closer to arbitration, and then he obviously signed. But when you're talking about, you know, Pionk, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine, you got to fit in Eric Comrie. I realize that Eric Comrie, you know, is going to spend the majority of the year in the AHL. But the point is, Chevy has other players to sign.
Let me ask you guys this about the, I mean, Kopp is represented, as we said, by Kurt Overhart. Chevy has dealt with Kurt Overhart ad nauseum through Jacob Trouba. Again, there's a, I don't want to say there's a conflict, but they're getting closer to having to go to an arbitration hearing between the two sides.
Which is not a nice process.
Which is not a nice process. Do you think that there is some conflict between Kevin Cheveldayoff and Kurt Overhart?
That's possible. You mentioned, Drew, there, and I really don't know. I mean, I'd like to think that I'm an insider, but I really am not. So when you're talking about the history, we know what the history is with with Jacob Trouba, and we know Kurt Overhart's history with other clients, right? He's somebody that you'd say is aggressive.
He, definitely would use the word aggressive, which is probably what his clients want. Right. So that's not a
That's his job.
He's the Scott Boris of the NHL.
There you go.
And his job is, Dave, to get the most money he can for his clients. I get it. That's the game. It's a game.
In this instance, your agent isn't a guy for looking out for the what's best for the team. He's looking out for his client. And his. I mean, obviously, ultimately, if his client does well, he does well. But at the end of the day, he's not here saying, what can I do that's best for the Winnipeg Jets? So people have to realize that. That's why players have agents. And, you know, look, at the end of the day, I get it. You know, people will argue, isn't it better to take a little less money and you know, have the team do better. I can totally understand that way of thinking, because you're saying, you know, if I take, you know, half $1 million less, you know, and people will say, oh, you're already making $2.5 million. What do you need that extra money for? I get it. But I'm just saying that these guys have a finite period of time.
Yep.
Most players don't play for 15 years. Mm-hmm. Most guys aren't Joe Thornton.
Right. And Andrew Kopp's a young player. He's 25. So when you're talking about, you know, Patty Marlowe or Joe Thornton taking a hometown discount to finish their careers in San Jose, that's different.
Way different.
I mean, I don't expect Andrew Kopp to take any type of discount. I realize that, you know, the Jets have to be, you know, weary of, you know, how much money they have left. And it's funny, right now the Jets have the most salary cap room in the NHL.
But only because they haven't got Connor and Laine.
That's going to get eaten up pretty quickly when you talk about Laine and Connor, right? So I agree with you, Dave. I mean, Andrew Kopp wants to maximize his value, but the Jets also want to find value in his contract, because they know that Laine and Connor, for example, are going to get a lot of money.
Well, then maybe the value from the Jets' perspective is they hold their nose a little bit, sign him to a one-year deal.
Yep.
Which might end up, you know, if it ends up costing them more money in the long term because he has a great offensive year, well, that's not such a bad thing. That means a player had a great offensive year that you weren't necessarily expecting that to be his role.
Well, you're incentivizing him.
Yeah.
And so, and as we've talked about before, like whenever you incentivize a person, it generally results in better production.
That's what you're hoping for.
Not always. But I mean, the reality is, especially, look, I mean, you think Kevin LeBanc is going to be taking off this offseason, or is he going to be killing himself? Because knowing what he, I mean, again, we think that he's going to be.
We think there's a contract in a drawer already. Yeah,
we think he's going to be signing a contract in January. But the reality being that you've got a guy who will be really
motivated. If Andrew Kopp signs a one-year, $2 million deal with the Jets, and he'd still be an RFA next season, and he puts up career highs in offensive points, the Jets, I mean, would have to pay him. They would have to pay him more than they would necessarily have to pay him if they go through this arbitration process. But again, maybe you've taken a player that you thought was limited to X role, and now you realize, oh wait, this is a guy who can play higher up in our lineup. You know, from the Jets' perspective, I see less risk involved, because worst case scenario, he matches, you know, he doesn't have an offensive breakthrough. And so you know what you have as him. And he's a $1.5 million to $2 million player for the majority of his career per season.
Well, the Jets
best case scenario is he improves his offensive numbers. And yeah, you're going to have to pay him, but you have to pay him next year. So it's not a problem you have to deal with immediately. And as a result, you get offensive production out of him at a pretty good rate, on a hypothetical $2 million, $2.2 million contract. Whatever it might be, I think it's better than going through this arbitration process, because at the end of the arbitration process, if it gets that far and the arbitrator has to make a ruling, you have a player who has a two-year contract, but then he's an unrestricted free agent, and boy, oh boy, it seems like he'd be out the door at that point in time. Anyways, we shall see. Before we go to break, I want to make note of something. You know that here on the show, we are fueled by Tim Hortons donuts on a regular basis. Today is the Special Olympics Day at Tim Hortons. So go there. You can buy the special donut that was created by a special Olympian. It'll be sold at a premium donut price for one day only. That is today. And all proceeds will go to Special Olympics, which supports Canadians with intellectual disabilities to help them participate in sports. It's a great cause. The Special Olympics donut was created by Tori Ranson from Georgetown, Ontario. So if you're in the market for a donut today, if you want to, you know, get a little bit of a sweet tooth, go to Tim Hortons, pick up the Special Olympics donut. Use hashtag choose to include on Twitter. It's the Special Olympics donut day of inclusion. When we come back, more on Andrew Kopp. What role do we think he's best suited for next season as a member of the Winnipeg Jets? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
You know, I thought I was very comfortable at center kind of throughout the second half of the year. You know, I was able to, you know, produce at a decent clip, you know, over the last 50 games. And so, you know what, if it's, you know, I mean, it's not really going to be my decision, but, you know, comfortable playing, you know, either or.
The Andrew Kopp Hockey Show continues here on TSN Radio 1290. That was from the exit interviews after the Jets' defeat at the hands of the St. Louis Blues earlier this spring. Andrew Kopp talking about sort of the expanded role and his expanded offensive performance that he put up, the numbers he put up as the season went on in 2018-19. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friend Dr. Les Rykus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rykus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. The best role for Andrew Kopp in the 2019-20 season. I have to give a shout out to Murat Atesh of The Athletic. He wrote a great article, yep, sort of delving into this, so piggybacking off that article. You know, we sort of know what Andrew Kopp has been so far with the Jets. Typically, you know him mostly as a member of the TLC line, playing on the wing.
Yep.
Adam Lowry up the middle, Brandon Tanev on the other wing. That's, yep, sort of the role that most comes to mind when it comes to Andrew Kopp as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Murat sort of did a deep dive and explored the various options for Andrew Kopp or for the Jets in their usage of Andrew Kopp. And I want to go sort of through some of those options with you guys. First of all, I guess the top line question. Do you think that the Jets should use Andrew Kopp more as a center or as a wing? We did see him as a center a fair bit last season. That was more or less for the first time in any lengthy period of time where he's been a center for the Winnipeg Jets. Most of the time, as I said, on the wing. So do you like him more as a center or as a wing, Dave?
Well, I mean, I like him as a center because I think he's defensively responsible. So I think, me personally, I think that, you know, when you have that position, especially for a guy who's been in the league for a few years, like we talk about Jack Roslovic and his usage as a center with the Moose, and now obviously playing wing in the NHL, I don't think he's ready to be anointed as that, even, you know, that next center for the Winnipeg Jets. So I don't mind Roslovic having the opportunity to continue to his development in the NHL, you know, learning from guys like Kopp and Lowry, the responsibility. I mean, again, he's a pretty responsible guy, but I like Kopp as a center because I think he knows the position, and he is what you want. And I mean, from the Jets' perspective, that's the one area, especially next season when the defense may not be as good as it was previously. You're going to need those guys who are defensively responsible, and I think Andrew Kopp is one of those players.
Yeah, put me in the camp of, you know, wanting Andrew Kopp to possibly play second line center for the Jets, really. And I realize that, you know, some people might get a little uncomfortable with that because you look at Andrew Kopp and you say, well, you know, he maxes out as a third line guy, mm-hmm, or kind of a middle six forward, right?
Well, he's never put up numbers, you know, at this stage in his career. I mean, his career high in points is 28. That was 2 years ago. Last year, had he been healthy, he would have exceeded that. But you wouldn't necessarily think of those numbers and think second line center. you know, that's to your point, Ezzy, about why people might be surprised to hear the possibility of Andrew Kopp playing that role for the Winnipeg Jets.
Right. But if you look in the second half of the season, and Marat, you know, touches on this, mm-hmm. you know, his point production went up big time in the second half of the season.
21 points in his final 46 regular season games.
Well,
so
there you go.
A little less than 0.5, you know,
right.
which extrapolated over the entirety of the season would put him somewhere in the, you know, the 40-point
sure.
range.
Right. And again, if you put him on a line, for example, with, you know, Blake Wheeler, for example. And, you know, that goes back to the conversation we had with Sean Tierney last week, you know, splitting up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler, mm-hmm. because I'm also in the camp of Patrick Laine needs to play with Mark Scheifele. I truly believe that. And then you have to figure out, you know, are you going to keep Blake Wheeler on that top line, or are you going to possibly use Nikolai Ehlers on that top line? Like, I would love to see Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine with Mark Scheifele in the middle. And then maybe you have Kyle Connor, Andrew Kopp, and Blake Wheeler. Like, Andrew Kopp, to me, has untapped offensive abilities. I don't think Andrew Kopp is ever going to be a 30-goal, 70-point guy
no.
or anything like that. But I absolutely think he can be a 20-goal, 45-point guy. And then you're talking about Brian Little, right? I mean, at this point in his career, Brian Little is a 45, 50-point guy. Like, nobody expects Brian Little to put up 75 points.
Not anymore, certainly.
Right?
Yeah.
So when you're talking about Andrew Kopp, I mean, sure, you know, he could play wing on the third line. He could center the fourth line. And Marat does a great job here of explaining, essentially, his versatility. Because Andrew Kopp excels. He is very similar, in my opinion, to Michael Frolik. Obviously, you know, Michael Frolik was not a center. But when you're talking about Frolik or Matty Perreault, another guy, second line, third line, fourth line, even the top line. Mm-hmm. But to Dave's point, you go back to the University of Michigan, you know, you go back to the earlier parts of his career, Andrew Kopp was a center, right? So that's his natural position. But then Marat talks about, well, the reason why he was so effective with Adam Lowry and Brandon Tanev was because he's a winger trapped in a center's body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So he has all of those defensive responsibilities and that vision and all that. But I think the point is, regardless of the amount of money that Andrew Kopp gets, 1 year, 2 years, I mean, there always is the chance that it's a one-year deal, but, you know, it looks like it's going to be two.
The negotiation will play itself
right,
out, right?
Right, exactly. Regardless of what that number is, I mean, the reality is, because of circumstances, Andrew Kopp is going to have an increased role on this team. And quite frankly, he deserves it. I mean, we've talked about it. And you know, going back to the center versus wing debate, I mean, he's a guy that's really good in the faceoff circle. You know, he's got, I think, an underrated physical element to his game. But the reality is, you know what to expect out of him. And that's why Paul Maurice can put him with players like Patrick Laine. And he can still excel. So I think that's probably, in addition to the defense, Drew,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we don't know where a guy like Neil Pionk is going to slot in. We don't know, you know, is Sammy Niku going to play on the left side or the right side? Is he going to be paired up with Buff? Or is he maybe going to be paired up with Tucker Pool? Like, there's a lot of questions on the back end, and there aren't as many questions in goal or when it comes to the forward lines. But the big question is, where's Andrew Kopp going to play? And is Paul Maurice going to break up Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler?
Well, let me ask you this, Dave. I mean, would you rather your four centermen be Scheifele, and in no particular order, mm-hmm. Scheifele, Little, Lowry, Kopp?
Yes.
Or Scheifele, Little, Lowry, Roslovic?
No, Kopp.
I mean, it seems like he's
yep.
on this team right now. He's tailor made as a center because
yep.
as much as he's a natural center and skilled at it, there seems to be no appetite to play Jack Roslovic at this point in his career as a centerman. Perhaps they're easing him into the NHL like they did Andrew Kopp.
Mm-hmm.
It seems, and otherwise, you know, your fourth line or your fourth centerman position is a big question mark to some degree.
I think what will become incumbent on Paul Maurice next season, in addition to changing up some of the lines that seem to be sacrosanct. But I think the biggest thing is just to showing that you can roll out. We talked about it with Sean Tierney. I thought he made a good point about the idea of balance
mm-hmm.
and really showing that you can come at a team in waves. And I think if you just are so loaded on one line versus really spreading that wealth out, I mean, sure, maybe individually guys won't have the same level of success because, you know, Scheifele and Wheeler aren't playing together. But the reality is, at the end of the day, Paul Maurice doesn't care about individual success. He cares about team success because he's a coach of a team. He's not a coach of individuals.
Yeah, he needs the Jets to be successful, not one
absolutely.
Player.
Absolutely. And I think that from his perspective, first of all, from the perspective of health and getting these guys healthy into the playoffs, I mean, you need these guys to have less minutes. And I think if you've got balance throughout the lineup, then you're going to see a benefit later in the season. One, because mm-hmm. you're going to have guys who are more reliable. Two, you're going to have production across the line. So if one guy goes cold, it doesn't suddenly offset the entire team. And three, I just think like you're just, like I said, you'll have a better result at the end of the season if you do that versus what we've seen for the last few years.
Right. And guys, just quickly, if Kopp ends up centering the fourth line with Mason Appleton and Christian Vesalainen, you probably have one of the best fourth lines in the league. Mm-hmm. And whether that's your fourth line or third line, or if, you know, you have Matty Perreault, Adam Lowry, and you keep Andrew Kopp on the wing, that's an excellent third line. But maybe ideally you'd like to see Lowry as your fourth line center.
But Ezzy, to your point about Andrew Kopp as the second line center, you know, playing within the top six with that sort of elite talent on the wings,
yep.
all of a sudden, if your fourth line or one of your bottom lines, quote unquote, is Brian Little, Matthew Perreault, and then one of Appleton or Roslovic or Vesalainen. Well, you have a rookie being shielded by two very experienced veterans.
Yep.
You have pretty good defensive responsibility up and down your centerman position in your lineup. I mean, that to me makes a lot of sense, you know, to Dave's point about balance and needing to, you know, the Jets 2 years ago when they were so successful, they were rolling the lines. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul Maurice could throw anybody over the boards and
especially when they got a guy like Paul Stastny.
Right. And he'd be comfortable in any situation. Last year, that clearly wasn't the case, as we saw. I mean, they were grinding the Scheifele, Wheeler, and Connor line into dust by the end of the season. Instead, if all of a sudden, okay, Brian Little, you know, on a quote-unquote fourth-line shift with Matthew Perreault and whomever, you would expect that to be a possession-positive fourth line going up against presumably weaker talent. So Andrew Kopp, if he's given that opportunity as a second-line center, and if he runs with that opportunity, boy, oh boy, does that make the Jets, I think, a more dangerous forward group 1 through 12.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
When we come back, Emily Kaplan of ESPN.com is going to join us. We'll look around the NHL at some of the signings, some of the moves, what she likes, what she doesn't like in so far in the 6 or so weeks since, or the month or so since free agency opened. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From ESPN.com, we're pleased to welcome back to the program Emily Kaplan. Emily, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. How are you guys?
Doing well, Emily. How about yourself?
I'm good.
That's good. Obviously, Emily brought you on to take a look around the NHL as we're about 3 weeks since the start of free agency, and there's certainly been a lot of activity and a lot of trades and a lot of interesting moves made here, there, and everywhere. So from your perspective, Emily, what do you think has been the most interesting transaction thus far in the area since the Stanley Cup Finals ended?
Honestly, I hate to say recency bias, but that trade we saw yesterday was really interesting to me. Two teams unloading veterans who just weren't performing for them, James Neal and Milan Lucic. And you have to think that the Edmonton Oilers got the better end of the deal there to get James Neal, a top six winger. But that was just a fascinating trade because it was one for one.
You know, Emily, just sticking with the Edmonton Oilers, and obviously I think most people would say that, you know, James Neal's upside is higher, and there's a chance that, you know, the Flames will get that conditional third round pick and Neal will score 10 more goals than Lucic. But have the Oilers done enough? And I realize that, you know, there's a salary cap crunch there, but have the Oilers done enough to make themselves, I guess, a playoff contender, let alone a Stanley Cup contender?
Yeah, I'm not so sure right now they have, but it's Kent Holland is looking in the long view, and when he took over, this is like, it's not a 1 to 2 year fix. This is some damage that's been done that's going to take some time to undo. So I think that they're better than they were. I think that they're under the right direction, but it's all about drafting and developing the right players for them and unloading some of those contracts, and that's going to take a couple of years down the line.
You know, Emily, about a week ago, you did a recap on ESPN about the free agency signings. Which one do you think will have the most impact in the 2019-20 season?
Artemi Panarin to the New York Rangers, just because it changed the complexion of that franchise. that signing alone, you know, they did a lot of things, right? They got Jacob Trouba. They got Kaapo Kakko as the number two pick in the draft. But really, getting Artemi Panarin announced themselves as not being in rebuilding mode anymore. It announced themselves as being, like, ready to contend starting next season and being at least very competitive next season. So that one, I think, would have the most impact.
Emily Kaplan is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Emily covers the NHL for ESPN.com. You know, Emily, sticking with the Rangers, I mean, they've had a most fascinating offseason. As you mentioned, they get Jacob Trouba from here in Winnipeg. They draft Kaapo Kakko by the luck of the lottery ball. You know, they get Artemi Panarin. I'm sure I'm missing something off the top of my head. Did Jeff Gorton sort of say to all other general managers, you know, there's no such thing as a long rebuild now? Or was this just a perfect storm of events that can only really happen in a city and in a market like the New York Rangers market?
Yeah, I think he just said this is the way to do it. You got to know when to cut the cord and say, we're not contending right now. We need to sell off assets. And he also said, like, you need to know when to pivot and turn that corner. And that's what he did so well. And I think that's what he set the example of. And there's teams that I look at, like, I live in Chicago and I wonder, the Blackhawks, you know, made some moves to get a little more competitive next season, but could they have benefited from doing something like what the Rangers did 2 years ago? Probably, but they're not. But I think Jeff Gorton really set the example of how a rebuild can be done quickly.
Emily, you had a Q&A with new Seattle GM Ron Francis yesterday up on ESPN.com, and one of the questions that I thought that was the most interesting that you asked Ron Francis is about the expansion draft and how, you know, GMs might be a little bit more cautious this time around. Is that why, you know, that extra year that Ron Francis is going to have, it's going to be so valuable because he's really going to have to really start getting to work and figuring out, you know, how he's going to tackle this thing?
For sure. GMs are going to be savvier. And, you know, the way I phrase that question, and this is what I believe, is that the expansion draft for Vegas, no one had gone through it before with those restrictions. Everyone kind of got a little too cute and tried to do, you know, some side deals. And I think it backfired. And I think GMs are going to be savvier this time around. Ron Francis kind of defended his fellow GMs. He said, no, you know, if there's a player you want to protect, you got to protect him if you think he can you know, affect your roster right now. But I do think it's going to be more difficult this time around. I think people are going to be smarter this time around. And because of that, yeah, that extra year is going to be crucial. And he said he's going to start thinking about scouting some pro players beginning this season.
You know, Emily, sticking with your Q&A with Ron Francis, did you get the impression from him that he was kind of had unfinished business as a GM and really wanted to kind of be able to make his mark after leaving Carolina?
Yeah, it didn't end well there. You know, he feels, and I would agree, that he was doing everything right, right? There was an organization that wanted to rebuild. He was being patient with it. He had drafted really well, but they got a new owner in there, and they just wanted something different. And Tom Dundon kind of ousted him, for lack of a better word. And, you know, when you're out and you're around hockey, you realize how much you miss it. So, yeah, I think there's a burning fire in him to get back to it.
Emily Kaplan is our guest here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Emily covers the NHL for ESPN.com. And Emily, you said you're based in Chicago, and I think the Blackhawks have certainly had a fascinating offseason. They get a guy like Calvin DeHaan from the Carolina Hurricanes. They have what I think is the best free agent signing of them all, the 1 year for Robin Lehner. I think that's a great signing, shoring up the goaltending position. They make the trade where they ship out Artem Anisimov for Zach Smith with the Ottawa Senators earlier this week. Sort of a two-part question. You know, one, have the Blackhawks maybe reaffirmed themselves as a playoff contender in the ultra-competitive Central Division? And specific to the Central Division, from my perspective, it looks like you have a maximum of five playoff spots for maybe six playoff-worthy teams. How do you see the Central Division shaking itself out?
Yeah. The Blackhawks did make some really good moves. I agree with you. I love that Lehner signing. I think it's genius. I think that they announced themselves as someone who could contend for a playoff spot this year, but not necessarily like a team to be feared. That said, they could totally surprise us. As for the way the Central is going to shake out, look, Nashville got a lot better. I really like the addition of Matt Duchene. That fills a lot of needs for them. I think that's going to put them maybe at the top of the division. I love what Colorado did this entire offseason. I can't imagine them not making the playoffs. The Wild's probably out. The Jets are interesting to me. I, you know, they got a little bit worse, especially because they had to lose so many players on the blue line. But at the same time, I felt like, you know, there's probably some bad juju that was going on at the end of last season. If they can just fix that, they'll be kind of the wagon that we saw 2 years ago. So to answer your question, the second one, it's a jumbled mess, and it's going to be hard to pick out which of these teams is going to fly out. And the crazy thing is I haven't even mentioned the St. Louis Blues, who are the defending Stanley Cup champs, and that's just kind of the way it goes. We kind of disrespect them because it's so hard to repeat.
Emily, not too long ago, Bob McKenzie, TSN insider, a.k.a. Bobby Margarita, because we're here in July, tweeted out that he doesn't think any of the big RFAs are going to sign before Labor Day. So we're obviously talking about players like Patrick Laine, Mitch Marner, Mikko Rantanen, Brock Besser. Are you in the same camp as Bob McKenzie? Are we going to have to wait until September?
I think they're all kind of waiting for each other to figure it out. And yeah, there's no rush for any of their agents to get into a deal. People are kind of waiting for the dominoes to fall, and some of these negotiations are really hard. Marner specifically, just because the ask for term and cap hit are so far off from the player and team. So yeah, I do think that most of these are going to linger for some time.
Now, Emily, if there's one team you had to pick out after, you know, well, obviously there's still some signings to happen, but which team do you think can emerge next season and kind of surprise everyone and be that surprise team that everyone is scratching their head going, I didn't anticipate that team being able to do what they were able to do?
That's a great question. Maybe the Oilers, to be honest. You know, we talked about them earlier, and, you know, they didn't do a ton this offseason to announce themselves as contenders, but they can't be as bad as they were last year. And I just think now that they have a new GM, they're in the right direction, and people are going to say, you know, I think the players know that. And it's heart mental with them, to be honest.
Emily, last question for you. We talked about the RFAs and how they've really been static. There hasn't been a lot of movement, except for Sebastian Aho, who, of course, signed the offer sheet with the Montreal Canadiens. You know, having now gone, you know, 3 weeks since that contract was signed, and of course it was matched by the Hurricanes, does it make any more sense to you now than it did when it occurred? Because it seems like, you know, he didn't sign for a great deal of an increase over what he probably, you know, would get, and it still seems a little peculiar to me, all in all.
Yeah, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think this is just the Montreal Canadiens testing Tom Dundon and kind of doing the rest of the league a favor to see the way he operates, because he's the new owner in town, and they just wanted to see what would happen, and you kind of just shoot your shot. So, to me, that's kind of my big takeaway, you know, now that the dust has settled. Obviously, the Carolina Hurricanes would have liked longer term, but you get what you get.
Emily Kaplan covers the NHL for ESPN.com. Emily, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks so much for joining us. Have a great rest of your weekend.
My pleasure. You too.
Take care, Emily. Thanks very much. When we come back, we talk about Bob McKenzie's comments regarding the RFAs. We, of course, know that could affect Laine and Connor here. Much more to come. We'll talk about that up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
Well, all is quiet on the RFA front. Maybe just a little too quiet, which is why we brought in this man, Dave Pullen, to explain what is going on. And, you know, from Marner to Laine to Tkachuk, no one seems to be any closer to signing these deals. Explain what's happening from a management perspective right now.
Well, Mark, I think, quite frankly, everybody's stepping back and taking a deep breath and seeing where they're at after such a busy season.
That was TSN's Mark Rowe and Dave Pullen talking about the logjam of RFAs. Not terribly surprising. It's sort of become the, you know, the standard operating procedure, because what happens, we've talked about it on the show for years upon years upon years, is that everybody is deadline hunting, waiting until they sort of have to, their hand forced to make an agreement when it comes to some of these players. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. The segment is brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at Zappia Group.com. Milan.com.
You know, going back to what Dave Poulin said, that's why yesterday was so awesome, because you had the Milan Lucic for James Neal trade, and then it seemed like at the same time,
yeah,
Jacob Trouba signed his contract.
Well, you
right?
sent me an email saying, hey, you forgot to put in the Lucic Neal trade into the show plan, to which I responded with, I've updated the show plan. You're looking at an old email and Trouba signed.
Well, no, you said when you're going to mention the Trouba signing in your next email, please read the show plan.
That's right. Exactly. It's like when you seem to be about 10 minutes behind everything else that was going on yesterday, but that's okay. You're a busy man. I appreciate that.
I'm usually 10 minutes behind, though.
Best case scenario, you're about 10 minutes behind in any event.
That checks out.
Yeah. Well, hey, you're the one who didn't wake up for your alarm.
Let me tell you, I picked up Ez for a number of Jets games, and there is no question I wait.
No, you tell him 10 minutes early.
It's similar to what happens on the radio show, except the difference is I usually am punctual, and I usually will give Ez the, I'm coming, I'm here, where are you, I'm leaving, I'm gone.
I'm actually better in the morning.
Yeah, you are.
I'm more punctual in the morning.
Why is that, do you think?
I think especially now with my daughter, but I just think I'm ready to go, like in the morning.
What happens at about 6:30? That, you know, at 6:30 in the evening, that just all, you know, the wheels fall off.
Dinner time.
Post dinner now.
Yeah, someone's at the trough getting their feeding at that point in time. In any event, Bob McKenzie came out of quote unquote retirement, where he's off for the summer and he's
sabbatical.
Sabbatical. Bobby Margarita, as he referenced.
Well, is he Ezzy Margarita?
Except he's Ezzy Margarita 12 months a year. There's a difference. Came back and he said basically that he believes that the vast majority of currently unsigned RFAs will still be unsigned when he reports back for duty after Labor Day. So, I mean,
well, it allows the rest of us to be able to enjoy our summers then. We don't have to sit by our phones. You can put them away and try and enjoy a beautiful Manitoba summer.
Is that a problem? Is that a concern? Is it anything that surprises you guys? I mean, never mind. I mean, focus on it through the Line A Connor lens, of course, more than anything else. But I mean, are you surprised by this?
I don't really understand the reason. Like, if you're Kevin Cheval day off, I mean, again, it depends on what you've got, obviously, but you have a pretty good idea of what the numbers are going to be available to you. So to me, why would you want to drag the process on? Why would you want it to get that close to September? And then perhaps even, I mean, again, we saw it with Nylander in Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
If it drags past, I mean, that just becomes such a distraction for a team.
Yep.
And the problem with the Jets is they really can't afford any distractions. Because of what happened last year, because of all the conjecture and the rumor and the innuendo about this team and what was going on, I think from that perspective, you just want to be able to have a clean slate in 2019-20. So to my perspective, I mean, again, you have to make the dollars and cents work. So you're not naive. You can't be like, well, you just have a kumbaya moment and have everyone come together. You have to obviously make the contracts work. But what I'm saying is I just think from a perspective of this team mentality, you really need to go into that 2019-20 season as a unified group, have everyone on the same page, have everyone in camp. I really don't think you can afford to have guys who aren't in camp. So to me, I don't understand, you know, sometimes like the idea that you're going to have the summer off. Well, why are you taking a summer off? You're not a teacher. Teachers take summers off. So what's the rationale for not working throughout that period of time to get something done?
And Dave, you know, one of the big reasons why some of these guys have not been signed is the salary cap crunch, right? Mm-hmm. But
that's been somewhat resolved at this point in that the signings
have
been made.
Not for the Leafs.
Well, I mean,
the Leafs
have made all their moves that they need to make in order to free up the space.
If Mitch Marner is going to make $11 million a year.
Well, but okay, to your point then, Ezzy, in the summer is when you can go over the salary cap.
Right.
So why don't you try and get that, you know, why isn't the quote unquote deadline, you know, which isn't obviously a hard and fast deadline, but why shouldn't the internal deadline be August 1st instead of September 1st? Because, I mean, it's always deadline hunting. So why isn't it that the deadline is moved up so that a player can have their certainty, they know what they're going to play for a month ahead of training camp or 6 weeks ahead of training camp, and then the Leafs have their buffer zone in which to make additional moves, or the Jets, you know, have their buffer zone with which to make additional moves? Why does it have to be that the, you know, training camp is the first of the start of training camp, as we saw last year with Josh Morrissey when he wasn't here to start training camp and then it came 2 days later? Why is that the first impetus to get a contract done as opposed to August 1st or August 15th or whatever it is?
Right. And I don't have the answer for that, but I think when you look at the players that have to be signed, right? We know Mitch Marner's one of the big ones, Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor. We know that other contracts affect these contracts, right? Mm-hmm. So look at Tampa Bay, for example. They have $5 million of cap space. Mm-hmm. Braden Point could be a $9 million player.
Right.
So all I'm saying is you're saying, why don't you have your house in order earlier?
Yeah, why don't you get that done on August 1st instead of September 15th?
Right. And, you know, we've never seen guys an RFA class like this. Like, we've never seen generational players all together like this in the last, you know, 5 years. I guess my point is, one team to me, like, one of the players that I thought would get done early was Sebastian Aho. I obviously didn't know there was going to be an offer sheet, but right. Mikko Rantanen is a guy. Colorado has a bunch of salary cap space. Like, Mikko Rantanen had an unbelievable year. He's going to get paid. Like, what's he going to be, $8 or $9 million? Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. So to me, I'm a little bit surprised that a guy like Rantanen hasn't been signed. But
and they've got $16 million.
But Laine and Connor, I mean, we talked about this going back to June, guys. I mean, maybe even May. We knew that Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor probably less so than Laine, but because of the season that Laine had, you know, with the big gaps where he didn't have his best offensive production, you know, because Laine is a 45 to 50 goal guy, and we talked about it last week. I mean, his shooting percentage will be better next year. I don't care what anybody says. I mean, Laine, I'd be shocked if he doesn't score, you know, 40 to 50 goals, right? But the point is, I mean, the Jets, you're talking about squeezing in Andrew Kopp. You're talking about squeezing in Neil Pionk. So, again, back to your question, I don't know why teams don't balance their books, if you want to call it that, or make sure that they have the room to sign these guys. But I think at certain points, you don't have room to sign these guys, or you're not able to move players. Like Tampa Bay, for example.
Right.
Tampa Bay is going to have to move some salary out to sign Braden Point.
So why don't they want to figure that out earlier rather than later?
Maybe they've tried. Like, maybe Julian Brisebois tried. Or and look at Vancouver, like Brock Besser, right? Good UND boy. You know, I thought he would get done early because you can't sign him to an offer sheet. He's one of the few RFAs who you can't sign to an offer sheet.
Right,
because
he falls between the cracks of the RFA rules.
Right. So yeah. Brock Besser, Mikko Rantanen, I expected those guys to be signed. But Drew, Mitch Marner, I didn't think was going to get done in July or August. And you know, you mentioned Bobby Margarita's comments. I mean Bob McKenzie knows. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, he's the man,
right?
I mean, he's the Bob father. He knows what he's talking about. So when he says that he doesn't think a lot of these guys are going to get done till September, most likely he's right. And when you talk about, you know, the first shoe has to drop for other players to get done. Like, when you talk about, you know, Rantanen and Laine, Braden Point, Kyle Connor, like, I think Braden Point and Kyle Connor are really good comparables.
But to Dave's point, which is, wouldn't you want to get your house in order and then take your vacation? I mean, that makes more sense. So if you're the Leafs, if you're the Jets, if you're the Lightning, teams that are, you know, have salary cap limitations and might need to make supplemental moves to everything. Mm-hmm. Why not figure that all out in the, you know, after the arbitration hearings or whatever in the first week of August? If you're a team like the Avalanche, I understand why there's no urgency. Right. You have $16 million in cap space. You basically only have to sign.
You've already signed JT Compher.
Right. You basically only have to sign Rantanen.
Yeah.
You have enough cap space that it's not going to be. There's no other moves that need to happen.
That's right.
There's no supplemental moves that you need to make. But if you're the Jets, if you're the Lightning, if you're the Leafs, if you're the, I mean, Rangers are now need to make some salary cap moves. Make those moves.
But the whole point, look at using the Rangers as your example.
They signed Trouba.
He
was arbitration eligible. That's the difference.
No, I'm not. But I'm saying in the idea of getting your house in order.
Right.
The Rangers now, I think I saw $1.something million left in salary cap.
Yeah, Larry Brooks, I think, tweeted it.
Right now they have none, it says.
Yeah.
And so they've got no, and they've still got some guys to sign.
Right.
So the point is but now they know that they've got what they've got in Trouba, and they've got to get some moves.
But the beauty of that from the Rangers' perspective is they knew what the deadline was. The deadline was Trouba's arbitration hearing.
Right.
Now, all these players aren't arbitration eligible. So
of course.
I wonder if the next CBA, they say, you know, if you are an unsigned player, you know, you don't have any arbitration rights and you're an unsigned player, maybe you have to sign by September 1st or you can't play in the league next year.
I mean,
as opposed to what was it for Nylander? December 1st?
December 1st.
So they moved that up 3 months so that, again, the deadline, which is all they're doing, is just waiting for whatever deadline it is for the most part. The deadline being training camp, the deadline being the start of the season, the deadline being that December 1st date. Move that up, and then you can get something done ahead of time.
Yeah, I have no problem with that. It makes a lot of sense. I don't know if the GMs would like that.
No, I think the GMs would love it.
The player agents.
Well, but again, it's all deadline hunting. The player agents aren't going to care. I mean, I mean, maybe they'll care, but the team doesn't want to have a guy not be able to play on their roster.
I think from an agent's perspective, they would care, because if you think about a team that needs a guy in the lineup, if that team starts to nosedive, it gives you obviously more leverage in terms of
look, another example, the Calgary Flames.
Sure.
Right? The Calgary Flames are going to save $500,000 a year now because they have Milan Lucic instead of James Neal. The Edmonton Oilers are going to retain 12.5% of Lucic's salary, okay? Mm-hmm. And they also paid him a $3 million bonus. So that move to me was to save money so you can use a little bit of that money, because they have to also sign Sam Bennett. Sure. Matthew Tkachuk is going to make
the big money.
$8 million?
Yeah, Matthew Tkachuk's going to get paid.
Something like that, $9 million? I don't know.
The same numbers that Laine and Connor, sure, in and
I,
around
I
there.
I think these guys are all trying to distance themselves from the Aho contract, because they're looking at the Aho contract and they want more, and they're thinking to themselves, I don't think we're going to get more than him.
The point is that the Calgary Flames right now have, I think it's $9.9 million. So when you're talking about Bennett, who made, I think, $1.8 last year, he's going to get a little bit of a raise. So when you're talking about, you know, Tkachuk getting $8 or $8.5 million, whatever
he
gets.
You got a guy like Michael Frolik is a guy that's rumored to be on the block.
But that's what I'm saying. I mean, like, I guess to your point, you would have to make that move already so that you have that extra $2-3 million. I just think it's really tough to squeeze these guys under the salary cap.
Get your business done in July and August. And then go on vacation, as opposed to getting part of it done or a small portion of it done in July and August, taking a vacation and then coming back and having to grind in September ahead of the start of training camp. It makes sense to me, Dave, makes sense to Dave too, and makes sense to you, Ezzy. When we come back, John Forslund is going to join us, talk about some of the moves of the Carolina Hurricanes this offseason, talk about Ron Francis being hired as the new general manager for the Seattle expansion franchise. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290 alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290.90. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our good friend John Forslund. John is, of course, the play-by-play broadcaster for the Carolina Hurricanes. You also hear his work all over the NBC Sports Network. John, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, John. Always love having you on. Let's start with the team you cover on a day-by-day basis, that being, of course, the Carolina Hurricanes. It was a great season for them, getting all the way to the Eastern Conference Finals, the bunch of jerks, et cetera, et cetera. And then they go out and they get the deal done with Sebastian Aho with a bit of an assist to the Montreal Canadiens, signing him to that offer sheet. Obviously the Hurricanes matched, as everyone expected them to do. Is there going to be any lingering resentment for a player sort of exercising his option to sign an offer sheet? Or do you think the team is water under the bridge and we're glad to have you back with us for the next five seasons?
Well, because we see it so infrequently, you know, it's hard to really gauge where it goes, because I think each player, maybe each circumstance is into its own. But I think it's fair to say that I don't think resentment is the right way to characterize this. I think when a player does this, his agent does this, and a team reaches out and goes forward with an offer sheet, there's a really high level of expectation that kicks in for that player from the management, from the ownership. And sometimes it might be unrealistic. And I think that's why we've seen some of these players who have done this and had their teams match eventually get moved. So we'll see. I think time will tell. The window is kind of tight here for Aho in terms of where the Hurricanes are with this player now for just 5 years, as opposed to the max of 8. I think if the team had its way, they would have signed him to an 8-year deal. I think Sebastian wanted to move the process forward. I think he was really worried that this could drag out for most of the summer, maybe in the training camp, and then from there, who knows. So knowing him, I think the most important thing for him was to speed it up. And how do you get there? Well, you get another team to jump in the water. Montreal did. Fair offer, not an over-the-top offer, as we all know. Substantial bonus money up front. Protects the player almost to $22 million within the first year of the deal for what could be a lockout moving forward. So that's what all the players want in these circumstances. But Aho also hits free agency at 26. So the Canes are going to look for a high level of production and leadership and for him to be the best player all the time, which I think he has been by and large. But I just think it gets to a different level once you enter into these waters. And I'm not going to speak for the owner of the Hurricanes. He'll have his own decisions to make on the player moving forward. But I think, you know, Tom Dundon did say he would match no matter what. He was good by his word. And I know he loves the player. And I think the Hurricanes needed this guy. And I think they're happy to have him back, obviously.
John, on Thursday, obviously, the big news in the hockey world was Ron Francis was named the first ever GM for the Seattle NHL team. And, you know, it obviously didn't go the way he wanted it to end there in Carolina as the general manager. But when and you know Ron Francis almost as good as anybody. When you look back at, you know, him as a player and his time as general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, why is he the right man for the job for the Seattle NHL team?
Because he's so calculated in everything he does. You know, his IQ hockey-wise is off the charts. It was as a player. I think that's a talent that, you know, fed into his skill, which took him to a Hall of Fame level. And I think to watch him, you know, first of all, get back into player development, then become an assistant coach, then get into front-end management, an assistant to Jimmy Rutherford, learned under him for a number of years, and then in 2014 get his opportunity. And when he had his opportunity, there were two things working against him. Number one, the Hurricanes had lived in the now for so long, and Jim was attempting to get the team back to the playoffs and live off what happened in 09, that a lot of moves were made short-term-wise with not a lot of forward thinking. So there weren't a lot of prospects in the pool, not a lot of draft choices worked out. He knew he had to rebuild that. And the second thing was the team was going through an ownership transition, which is never easy. So when that happens, and that can take a number of years, and it did, you're tied up budget-wise. And then you're in a place where you never want to get to the high end of the salary cap because of the market and your revenue-sharing team. So all those things were kind of weighing on Ron in terms of what he was attempting to do. But what he was able to do is build the organization back from a prospect standpoint, accrue draft choices, build a minor league team, as you know, that won the Calder Cup last year, lay down a foundation for a lot of these guys that this ownership group and management team inherited. They've changed direction a little bit. The Dundon group has changed direction, you know, within the last year, because I think the split, because the question would be, well, what happened? I think the split was that the new owner was looking for a more aggressive approach in terms of getting to situations quicker via trades, and Rod was convinced that his plan needed patience and more patience, and he wanted to see it through. So there was a divide there, and the split happened, and off he went. But I think he will be an ideal choice for this team, because it starts from the ground floor, and that's how he thinks. And I think he'll be able to surround himself with great people, make all the right decisions, take his time. He'll have a great budget to work with, a new situation, brand new team. You know, everything should work in terms of giving him the resources needed to be good at his job. But I think he may have learned a little bit about himself along the way, too. And if he adds a bit of a more aggressive approach to that intuitive thinking, I think they're going to have a bang-on choice for general manager.
John, in just two seasons with the Carolina Hurricanes, Justin Williams has had an incredible impact both on and off the ice. Do you anticipate that he will be coming back for his, I think, 20th season in the NHL?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's 50-50 right now. The team keeps saying as late as last week that they feel that he is going to play, but only he knows what he wants to do. I think it's late. I mean, I'm surprised it's taken this long. But he's just going to give it, I believe, till August and then have to act. But in the meantime, the Hurricanes have been active. And the Hurricanes are approaching levels they never have from the salary cap standpoint. So they're near the cap right now. With Brock McGinn's contract today, will inch them closer to it. So we'll see where it goes. I think they absolutely need this player back for one more season. The culture he brought to the table was unmatched. He plays right into Rod Brind'Amour's hymnal. Roddy did a magnificent job adjusting the team halfway through, but his message only holds a lot of weight because he hands it right over to Williams, and Williams takes it to the room, and the rest is history. So I still think they're a young team that needs tutelage like this, so he's a valuable guy.
John Forslund is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. John covers the Carolina Hurricanes as their play-by-play broadcaster. You know, John, the moves that don't get as much headlines or almost as important as the big headline-grabbing moves. And I'm speaking specifically about the signing of Ryan Dezingle and the acquisition of Eric Halla by the Hurricanes. In those two sort of under-the-radar moves, the Hurricanes probably pick up somewhere in the neighborhood of 45 to 50 goals next season if all goes according to plan. From your perspective, how important is it adding that much more depth scoring to the Hurricanes lineup?
Well, they realized last season when Jeff Skinner was traded last summer, you know, you're at least minus 30 goals. And look what he did, right? Especially in the first half of the season with Buffalo. So they knew when they hit January, they were still a team that needed to find scoring somewhere. So the first thing they did is move Victor Rask to Minnesota and pick up Nino Niederreiter. And his built-in chemistry with Aho was phenomenal. And he scored goals in bunches and really replenished that area of their team game. In this offseason, I think they looked at it again, saying they need more of it because I think they ran out of it in the playoffs. They looked at one area would be, you know, who can back up Aho and Jordan Staal in the three hole or maybe the two hole, depending where Staal slots in. But you have a defensive elite guy in Jordan Staal who doesn't score a lot, but you're going to have to get some goals somewhere and some speed to kind of fit into their identity. So Vegas, with cap trouble, has players available. They go out and get Eric Halla. That's a very good deal. The guy's capable of at least getting to 20 goals, provides the speed, kills penalties, good in the circle. You know, he's an excellent depth player. And then they had to make a hard decision on Calvin DeHaan. They signed DeHaan as a free agent last year, you'll recall, and the reason, obviously, was to get deeper on defense. And I think 1 through 6, you could put the Hurricanes defense up against anybody in the National Hockey League, and that was proven last year. But they recognized, you know, in the second half that with DeHaan, with 3 more years left on his deal, not very expensive, but expensive as a UFA. And is he a 3-4 or is he a 5-6? And he kind of morphed into a 5-6 guy. So they made a decision to move him to Chicago where he'll slot in better and use that money to sign Ryan Dezingle, just in case Williams doesn't come back. But if Williams does come back, they have even more goal scoring because Williams scored 23 goals last year. So Dezingle comes in, although, you know, he didn't have a great playoff, and especially in the second round, fell out of favor there. There's a healthy scratch for a game and had to step back in. He wasn't as much of a factor with Columbus as he was with Ottawa. But he's another guy with speed, another guy that can really shoot and knows how to score. And again, that plays right into how they play as a team, which is with speed, swarming the other side, forechecking aggressively, the type of team they have. They're one of the quickest teams in the National Hockey League, and that recipe worked for them last year. So I like what they've done because you're right. They're under the radar signings and acquisitions, but you have to have strength in numbers that way with those players that play today's game that can score. And then if you can rely on your back end, which is still pretty good, and your goaltending get back to the same level it was, especially in the second half of last season, you'll have a good chance to make the playoffs.
Now, John, we have some breaking news, so it's a good thing that we have you on. This happened about 5 or 10 minutes before you came on, but Brock McGinn has signed a 2-year deal avoiding arbitration. He's going to make $2.1 million AAV, and obviously he's not as big of a name as a guy like Sebastian Aho, but you remember he scored that double overtime winner in the first round for the Hurricanes, and I thought, you know, his physical presence was a big factor for the Hurricanes, especially in that physical series against the Boston Bruins. But how nice is that for him to get that contract done before going to arbitration, because he was a really key player for Rod Brind'Amour, especially in the playoffs?
Yeah, Brock's in a tough place because he's the type of player, you know, his skill set and what he brings isn't going to play out in the courtroom, isn't going to arbitrate very well because a lot of it is intangibles. A lot of it is, you know, grit, ability to get in first man on the forecheck and hit, excellent penalty killer, quiet leader, very popular guy within the room. All those things don't matter when you get before the judge. So when you look at the money, I think the team did well. He did okay by getting a 2-year deal. I think you could make an argument that I thought he was a little bit higher than that. I thought he was around 2.5, especially when you see some of the other contracts that have been given out, players of the same level of service and production and so on. But nobody wants to go to arbitration. You want to get the deal done before you get there, and today was the day. So at the last minute, they strike the deal. So it's good for the Canes. I know Brind'Amour really likes his player. And he's one of those go-to guys. He's a Swiss Army knife. You know, we say that a lot about guys who can play all over the lineup. He can jump into a top line if he has to because of injury or lack of production by those players. Obviously, he's a third, fourth line guy, a real good killer, but, you know, this will take him to unrestricted free agency in a couple of years, and he's earned every bit of it. You know, he had 16 goals 2 years ago, fell off that way last year, but still brought those same intangibles you need to win, and you point out, you know, the double overtime winner in Game 7 in Round 1. So, a real good player, no doubt.
John, about 3 hours west of us here in Winnipeg is Strathclair, Manitoba, which is the home of Morgan Geekie, who is a Calder Cup champion. He was the 2017 third-round pick of the Carolina Hurricanes. How much excitement is there in having their farm team win the Calder Cup and, you know, getting their young prospects that opportunity, that experience, and their, you know, and what do they anticipate in terms of development, those guys taking that next step and joining the Carolina Hurricanes next year?
Yeah, and Morgan's one of those guys who had a great year, seemed to get better and better as the year went along. And I know that he made a really good impression in training camp. He just needed to get stronger like most young players need to, and needed to get to a really tough league to figure out, you know, can you still do the same things you did in junior at that level? Can you still get to the scoring zones? Will it still pay off for you? And it did. He was sensational in the Calder Cup playoffs. So he will come to camp with an opportunity, and he's not alone. They have a lot of guys that they can look at long and hard here. And that gets to what Ron Francis did. You know, Francis was responsible for a lot of these players. Geeky in the last couple of years, you know, came into the draft mix. But the Kings, again, when you look at what they did in the past draft, they traded all over the place to accrue more picks. Went there with 10, came out of Vancouver with 12 draft choices. They have 11 draft choices next year. And by the looks of things from the experts who know, they're supposed to know what they're talking about with the draft, they received high marks, A-plus across the board in terms of who they drafted. So Geeky and his peer group will be pushed by what's coming from behind. And it's just the way the Canes have been trying to go for a number of years. It's just get younger, draft, develop, stay with it. And, you know, with a Calder Cup now, you can be proud of that. And I think that experience, no matter if we're talking this era or in the dark ages when I broke in, and I was in the American League from 84 to 91, the last 2 years I was there, the team that I was covering won Calder Cups. It's always been a proving ground. If you can go that deep and win, there's a variety of players that can take that experience a long way at the next level, and that's what they're expecting.
At the AHL level and at the NHL level, the Carolina Hurricanes organization is definitely pointed upward. John Forslund is their play-by-play broadcaster. John, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Hey, have a great summer. What's left of it, guys, and thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, John. You too. When we come back, we discuss Jacob Trouba signing that massive contract extension with the New York Rangers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Elsewhere in the NHL, Jacob Trouba has signed a 7-year contract with the Rangers worth an average of $8 million per season. New York acquired Trouba from Winnipeg last month in exchange for Neil Pionk and a first-round pick. And now the RFA defenseman becomes the Rangers' highest-paid blue liner. The 25-year-old Trouba spent his first 6 years in the NHL with the Jets, posting a career-high 50 points last season.
Courtesy our friends at NHL Network, Jacob Trouba gets the long-term big-money deal that he never got in Winnipeg, wouldn't and or couldn't, probably more wouldn't than anything else.
Money in the bank.
7 years, $56 million for
Jacob
Trouba.
I didn't know hometown discount.
No, $8 million per season. Good for him to get paid, a player like him getting paid a nice sum of money.
Well, the price of real estate is expensive in New York.
He can afford it now.
Troops is going to need that.
He can afford whatever sort of place he wants to buy in New York. He can afford it with $56 million heading to his bank account. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family owned and operated, has been serving quality home style food since 1985. For a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long, visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. So the numbers came out yesterday. You sort of expected that when he was traded there, he would be able to come to an agreement on a long-term deal. Any surprise that it's an $8 million a year contract for Jacob Trouba? Is this, you know,
no,
what you get when you put up 50 points on playing sort of top pair right side defense, and, you know, he struck while the iron was hot?
Yeah, no, he's an $8 million a year defenseman. We all know that, right? And now he's one of the highest paid defensemen in the NHL, right? He's right up there. I mean, he's not quite, you know, Erik Karlsson, Drew Doughty, but he's not that far off,
I think,
Dave.
I think I looked it up on
top 10.
I think he's the fifth highest paid defenseman in the NHL now on a yearly basis.
And you know what? He really does deserve to be. I don't know if he's a top five defenseman in the NHL. I would say that he's for sure a top 20.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're talking about, you know, the situation, mm-hmm. when he's coming off of that 50-point season, he's coming off of, for the last, what, 3 years being a top pair defenseman, if not 4 years with the Jets, right? Yeah. Basically, you know, the first year of Jacob Trouba's career was really, in the NHL I'm talking about, was the only year he wasn't a top pairing defenseman. You go back to, you know, the days he used to play with Mark Stewart, right? So when you're talking about Trouba, I mean, I think, when you consider his age, I don't think this is going to be an albatross at any point. It's not like you're signing Jacob Trouba at 29 years old, right? Mm-hmm. You're signing Trouba at, what is he, 25?
25.
24? Yeah, 25. So when you're talking about, you know, the skill set and mm-hmm. what he can bring, I mean, the Rangers have their guy. And what an offseason for the Rangers when you think about, you know, the landing of the big fish known as Artemi Panarin, the bread man, right? Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, going back to what Dave said earlier in the program, I mean, Jeff Gorton has some work to do here because Pavel Buchnevich is a very underrated player, Dave.
Yep.
I mean, this is a guy that you remember, he burned the Jets a couple of times. And when you're talking about Brendan Lemieux, I mean, Brendan Lemieux is going to get a raise. And I, by the way, think that Brendan Lemieux has really found a nice fit there as kind of a bottom six forward. Not kind of, he is a bottom six forward mm-hmm. on the Rangers, right? So that actually worked out for him. But when you're talking about the cap room, they don't have a lot. And you got to think Buchnevich, Drew, is probably going to get, what, $2 to $3 million?
Yeah,
right.
So I mean, they're going to have to. They definitely have to trade somebody out, and you've talked or a guy like Brendan Smith, you know, who they signed to a contract that, you know, he's not playing up to the standards of that contract anymore. You know, do they try and bury that contract in the AHL or something along those lines? They have to get rid of a contract in New York to make everybody fit. There's no question about it. They have some salary cap machinations still to work with. But to the point of, you know, our conversation earlier in the show, at least this gets done. This was the big ticket you needed to check off your board.
Yep.
Now, you know, now Jeff Gorton knows what he needs to, where he needs to make his tweaks in order to get all the rest of his players under contract, Dave.
Well, and it also puts him into a position where he gets to watch what the rest of the league is doing and then how those guys are, you know, faring and basically allow him to say, okay, well, here, I can target that or I can target this, as opposed to having to scramble at the last second.
Early bird gets the worm.
Well, yeah, and it really is true. I mean, he's got his ducks in a row in that regard, and so he basically, like as he said, he's got three players who are still RFAs that still need to get signed.
Tony D'Angelo's the other guy.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
But Tony D'Angelo's not going to be, I mean, he's going to be around $1 million.
Right? Yeah, right. So. Yeah, no, so that's, I mean, it's not
still
a big,
more than they have.
Right, right, exactly. It's more than they've got available right now, obviously, but the fact is that, again, he does have the luxury of being able to take a look around the entire league and seeing where he can kind of do his damage.
What about Kevin Shattenkirk, boys? I wonder if a team would consider bringing him in, because Kevin Shattenkirk, he's making, what, $5 million? $6
million? 6.6.
Right? So, I mean, you wonder, I mean, like, Artemi Panarin and Jacob Trouba are basically eating up, what, a quarter of their cap right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, between them, about $20 million between the two of them.
Like, 19.
It's incredible that...
19.6.
But if you want to be paying two guys, I mean, you want to be paying Panarin and Trouba. I think most teams would take
that.
Pay
the supers. Right? Pay your superstars. Exactly, right? Pay your superstars. Yeah. Pay your superstars.
So you mentioned Brendan Smith, and I think, you know, Kevin Shattenkirk is the guy that would be a lot more attractive. And you mentioned, I mean, Brendan Smith just isn't the same defenseman he was when he was playing for Detroit.
He's making $4.35 million.
So right, and he should probably be more like a $2 million a year defenseman, right? So, like, I mean, unfortunately, that might be a contract you can't move unless you eat the salary. So Kevin Shattenkirk is a really interesting one to me, because if you remember, I mean, Shattenkirk, he didn't have a good year last year. I mean, I'm not just talking about points. I'm just talking about overall, you know, what, and Brady Shea and Jacob Trouba, I imagine, is going to be your top pair.
Problem is with Shattenkirk is he has a no movement clause and a no trade clause.
Yeah, which is, so you're sort of stuck.
Modified.
Yeah, he's got to waive it.
Yeah. Whereas Brendan Smith, you can bury in the minors. He's only got the no trade clause. So, I mean, that would probably be where one of the moves the Rangers have available. But to the point way back in the first hour about Andrew Copp and betting on yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Jacob Trouba bet on himself. He got the 1 year arbitration deal. And
that's also a cautionary tale about waiting too long. Because the Jets, as we've talked about for a long time, should have done something with Trouba. Not this year.
Should have traded him. If it was clear he wasn't going to sign a long-term deal. He was never interested in signing long-term.
Because it's ironic, because you're saying you've got a defenseman who had a career year that increases what, in theory, would be his trade value. But the problem is that everybody knew the Jets were up against it.
Yeah.
And so,
with again, 1 year ahead of free agency, nobody was going to go crazy. And, right. and the offer, I mean, now that's not to say that the Jets got the best offer, that it shouldn't have got a better offer than they did, because I think they should have. But you're absolutely right, Dave, is that, you know, had Trouba been 2 years away from free agency, correct, as opposed to 1 year, and that's, you know, the Jets are a conservative organization, for better or worse.
Well, I mean, and again,
and I think this is one of those situations where their conservatism ended up, you know, costing them, mm-hmm. you know, in terms of the return for an asset. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Buffalo Sabres offseason. Bill Hoppe is going to join us. He covers the Sabres for the Times Herald and BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290, a little bit past the bottom of the hour, alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 1290. Standard messaging rates do apply. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Times Herald and BuffaloHockeyBeat.com, he covers the Buffalo Sabres. Bill Hoppe joins us on the line. Bill, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Our pleasure, Bill. Obviously brought you on to talk about the Buffalo Sabres offseason, and it's been an active one, certainly. Let me ask you this. Brass tacks, the Sabres are a better team now than they were last season, but are they playoff spot good right now?
I don't think they're playoff spot good right now. They've had a nice off season, as you said. They signed Jeff Skinner to a long-term contract, and yes, they overpaid for him, but I mean, he scored 40 goals last year, so I mean, it's a solid signing. They drafted Dylan Cousins 7th overall. They got Colin Miller, Jimmy Vesey. They signed Marcus Johansson. They just got Henry Yokokaru from the Chicago Blackhawks. So they've made some notable, nice additions that really didn't cost them a lot. But I think they're just in such a loaded division. It's going to take a loaded conference that it's going to take a lot more than 3 or 4 moves to get this team into the playoffs.
You know, Bill, you mentioned that it didn't cost Sabres GM Jason Botterill a lot, and that's what stands out to me. You mentioned, you know, Jeff Skinner, you know, was someone who was acquired, and you didn't have to give up a lot. And to me, that was probably the biggest coup for Jason Botterill, is that you were able to bring in Colin Miller, and obviously Vegas, you know, they needed the cap space. But when you're talking about Jimmy Vesey, same thing. They didn't have to give up any roster players. And same thing when you're talking about signing Marcus Johansson. Is that what's probably most impressive about what Jason Botterill has done, is that he hasn't had to give up any roster players to bring in all this talent?
You're right. It has been very impressive that he's been able to get these guys. I mean, pretty significant guys. I mean, Jeff Skinner turned out to be an NHL All-Star. He was scoring at a 50-goal pace until mid-February. Colin Miller is a guy who's, 26. He had 40 points 2 years ago. He just went to the Stanley Cup Final. He makes under $4 million a year. So he's getting pretty significant players for draft picks. For no one off the roster. So, to me, I mean, he's done a great job with that. Now, that said, I mean, he also traded Ryan O'Reilly and got no immediate return back, and it really bit the Sabres last year. But for some of the deals he's done over the last year or so, he's done a good job, in my opinion.
You know, Bill, how much excitement is there with Dylan Cousins, the 7th overall pick? Obviously, he had that little bit of a thumb injury in the development camp with the Sabres. But how much excitement is there in the organization? And also, what is the plan, do you think, for him next season?
I think there's a lot of excitement for him. I mean, you guys know it was a very deep draft. And with that number 7 pick, the Sabres were going to get a terrific prospect. They were going to get basically whatever they wanted. There was so much to choose from. But I don't know if he was going to just jump to the NHL at 18. I think the Sabres don't like to force guys. And like you said, he has a thumb injury now. He had to have surgery. So he might miss all of rookie camp, training camp. So I don't know if the NHL is in his immediate future this year, but definitely there's a lot of excitement over him. Just big body, he moves well, just a scorer, and they need a number two center, and I don't think he's going to be that number two center in the next year or two. But, I mean, 3-4 years down the road, he could definitely fill that role.
Bill Hoppe is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bill covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times Herald and BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill, fast forward to the start of training camp, September, you know, early September, September 15th, whatever it might be. Rasmus Ristolainen, is he on the Sabres defense? Is he on their back end, or is he playing in another city?
Oh, my God. I get asked that basically every day. my thought is that they're going to trade him. I mean, he's a terrific defenseman. He has some very notable flaws, but he's still a terrific defenseman. He's young. He's had four straight 40-point seasons. He's affordable for what he does. But he needs a change of scenery, in my opinion. I think it's gotten stale here for him. He's been here 6 years, and the Sabres haven't sniffed the playoffs. I think the losing just beats him down. And right now, the Sabres, they have a really unbalanced lineup. They have, I think, six right-shot defensemen. They have too many defensemen overall. They have too many left wingers. They have to balance out the lineup. More changes are coming, in my opinion. So my thought is at some point he'll be traded. But, I mean, if you want to keep him, it's not the worst move. Like all the things I just said. Plus, I mean, they have Ralph Kruger taking over as coach. I mean, it's not the craziest thing to try to make it work with a new coach. So, but my thought is he'll be traded.
You know, Bill, you just mentioned Ralph Kruger, and that was a perfect segue for my question, because it seems like it was a year ago that the Sabres named Ralph Kruger as their head coach, but it was actually just over 2 months ago. And, you know, when you talk about some of the new coaches that had success last year, right, you think of Rod Brind'Amour, you think of Craig Berube, who stepped in for Mike Yeo. Is that maybe something that Sabres fans can cling on to, knowing that Ralph Kruger isn't a new coach? He's had the experience before with Edmonton, albeit it was only a season. But when you talk about what he accomplished with Team Switzerland and what he was able to accomplish at the World Cup of Hockey, you know, you talk about Team Europe going on that surprising run facing Canada in the final there. Is that what Sabres fans can take hope from, that Ralph Kruger isn't this guy that just doesn't have a lot of coaching experience? He's a guy that's had a lot of success at many different levels.
I think so. And I think you mentioned that Team Europe gig. I mean, I don't think he gets the Sabres job without that Team Europe gig. And I know it was only a short, whatever, 3 week, 2 months type thing 3 years ago. But I mean, he's been out of the NHL for 6-7 years. He was basically out of hockey for 6 or 7 years. So he needed that to get this Sabres job. And it's a unique hire just because, I mean, been around forever. He's had success on the international scene, but he coached the Oilers. But we don't know a lot about him. There's not a huge track record for NHL seasons, for even recent European seasons. So this could be a terrific hire. It could backfire. I'll lean toward, I think it could work out, but we don't know a lot about Ralph Kruger. All the things I've heard are very positive, but This is you don't see a lot of hires with this in the NHL, like this in the NHL. There's a lot of recycling in the NHL, a lot of the old guard. This is kind of out of the box.
And Bill, what I was kind of angling at is when you look at what he was able to accomplish in that short period of time, right? We talked about the World Cup, but then, you know, he was, of course, the coach for Switzerland for three different Olympics from 2002 to 2010. So that's kind of what I was getting at with you, is that, you know, when you look at the Buffalo Sabres, obviously, you know, they've brought in some key players when you talk about, you know, Marcus Johansson, or even going back to, you know, Brandon Montour, but, you know, they were able to bring in a guy like Colin Miller. But I think maybe that's what people are a little bit hesitant to say, that the Sabres are going to be a playoff team, just because, you know, they struggled so much last year. So you're wondering if he's going to be able to put it together in a short period of time. And I guess that's what I was getting at, is that he was able to do that when you're talking about Switzerland and Team Europe.
Well, in the introductory press conference, Jason Bottrell pointed stuff like that out, that he has a terrific track record in short tournaments, making changes on the fly, getting the best out of a team in a short period. So, that's part of his pedigree, is being able to turn teams around on a dime in do or die tournament. So I think that's definitely something Sabres fans should like about him.
No, Bill, oftentimes I'm looking at the AHL rosters of teams and you're seeing who are those players that are going to take that next step, get to that next level. And one player who we seemed to talk about quite a bit last year on Rochester was 2014 seventh round pick of the Sabres, Victor Olofsson. And it really seemed, you know, he had 30 goals, 33 assists in 66 games for Rochester, obviously played six games with the Sabres. But how likely do you think it is that he's going to be wearing a Sabres uniform full time next season?
I very likely. I think he has a spot to lose, and he's quietly just a terrific prospect. That 2014 draft for the Sabres after they took Sam Reinhart was just awful. I mean, I don't think they've gotten another NHL game out of anyone other than Victor Olofsson. And here's this guy in the seventh round, an unknown, who 5 years later has a chance to become one of the better players probably from the draft, or at least the last three, five or six rounds. He was a Swedish goal king a couple of years ago for Frölunda. He's a terrific shot. He stepped to the AHL right away last year, and he was a notable player. And I think they envision him as a top six forward, a left winger, maybe skating beside Jack Eichel someday, maybe on that second line. But I think he has a spot to lose this year for sure.
Last question. Quietly
just a terrific prospect.
Last question for you, Bill. The trade of Alex Nylander to the Chicago Blackhawks, was that more of a case of the desire, or the acquisition of Joki Haru being too good to pass up, or a case of the organization sort of being done with Nylander always being on the cusp to move to an NHL regular spot?
Well, I think it might be both. For a while, we knew this was probably coming, that they were going to trade him. He wasn't Jason Botterill's guy. And one of the I didn't know a lot about Joki Haru, and one of the things we were kind of waiting to hear his flaws, what was the matter with him, and the more we learned about him, and the more the Blackhawks were willing to part with him, the Sabres wanted him. So it's not like the Sabres got this this prospect that the Blackhawks were down on or who had some notable problems. I think the Blackhawks just coveted Alexander Nylander, and they were willing to part with him. So it was a pretty unique trade when you look at it. Two young first-round picks, 20 and 22.
Bill Hoppe covers the Buffalo Sabres for the Times-Herald and BuffaloHockeyBeat.com. Bill, always appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
All right, thank you, guys.
Take care, Bill. When we come back, we discuss the Lucic for Neil trade. One final segment. Saturdays are For the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
The New Jersey Devils mascot is at a kid's party.
Okay.
And he turns around and goes running and right into a window. I mean... what was he thinking?
I mean, your sight lines in the costume might be a little hard. I thought he was just running outside.
Nothing more important than that happened in the hockey world this week.
Can we agree that that was the highlight of the summer?
I think so. I mean, the summer's not over, but I think it definitely was the highlight. In case you missed it, and if you did, I'm not sure what you've been doing with yourself. The New Jersey Devils mascot was, for some reason, at a child's birthday party.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like a 2-3-year-old child's birthday party.
I'm sure Mickey Moose occasionally hits a birthday party
or
two.
Sure, you can pay to have these guys' mascots show up. And they're playing with some sort of, you know, a big parachute sort of game that you play with you when you're kids.
Yeah.
And then for no very good reason, the Devils mascot drops the parachute, turns around, and sprints full blast into a window that smashes.
No, it doesn't smash. It shatters.
Fine. Pardon me. It shatters. Nothing about the entire sequence made any sense. Why is the Devil at a kid's birthday party? Why does he abruptly run into a window? Why does it shatter like that?
See, I don't, like, if you follow Jay and Dan, and obviously we do, like, I follow the Jay and Dan Instagram account, and that's where I saw it. Like,
it was all over the place.
I don't know if he knew that the window was there, right? Because you can't see in the mascot.
I don't buy that. I think the cynical side of me...
Was he purposely trying to bounce off the window?
I think the cynical side of me is that this entire thing was an act to get attention.
Absolutely not.
I think it's a dummied window. I think it was a setup from day one. No.
True. This isn't WWE.
There's a scandal brewing here when it comes to the New Jersey Devils mascot.
Think so. I mean, what did you think of when you saw that? Didn't you think of that old Simpsons episode when they say the PTA is disbanding, and then the guy
jumps
runs
through the window,
but then he comes back?
Yeah. No, the PTA is not disbanding. I don't know what it was. You check it out. It's online.
That's amazing.
Google New Jersey Devils mascot.
No, Drew, do you have a conspiracy theory there about the New Jersey Devils mascot?
Well, and well, the fact jealous. That he's jealous of Gritty's attention.
I was like, okay, what's the end goal there?
Okay. To get attention. He's, well, no, okay. He's jealous of Gritty.
But I was saying, if you have a theory, you need to at least expound as to why.
He's sick and tired of living in Gritty's shadow.
Well, wouldn't this he just take out Gritty? Why would he run into a wall?
This is the first step. If this doesn't get him the necessary attention.
Well, clearly it did. I mean,
we're talking about it.
Is Gritty Nancy Kerrigan and the New
Tanya
Jersey
Harding?
Yeah. Don't be surprised. There could be some mascot-on-mascot violence coming throughout the course of the season. It's gonna really heat up that New Jersey-Philadelphia rivalry.
It must be summer if we're doing mascot.
Segments. This is the most important segment we've ever done, Dave. The power rankings of our most important segments are what was under Ezzy's pillow that he ate
that
3 days
true.
Later,
yeah.
And then...
Mascots.
No, Ezzy's showering with a hose and not a shower head.
Okay, that's fair. That's...
Ezzy's rotten apple.
Yeah.
Then the mascot.
Okay.
Yeah. Notice that the first three things are all Ezzy.
They're escapades.
Yeah, they're escapades.
Yeah, and Patrick Laine and Kyle Connor's contracts, they don't factor in
those
at all.
Those aren't even top 10.
They're not going to happen until September, apparently, so we got lots of time to talk about.
Well, it's nice of them to wait till we're back on air.
That's true. Exactly. We're going to be on next week.
I will say that's very courteous of them.
We're going to be on next week, and then we're going to be on. We're going to take calls next week, so you can get your calls ready now if you need a week to prepare. And then we're going to be on Labor Day weekend because that's LaBurger week, so we always have to have the hamburger eating a hamburger on air, which is something everybody looks forward
really,
to.
You guys get to eat the hamburger. Remember last year I choked?
I do remember you started choking on the hamburger last year.
I got too excited and I was
eating
it too fast.
Because eating a hamburger live on air really does a lot for listeners.
Well, it's theater the kale. Of the mind, Dave.
No, but remember the burger had kale in it and I wasn't ready for that. I'm not
that's
used
true.
To having that healthy
no,
aspect.
That's,
of
too,
a,
that's too healthy
Ezzy
for you.
Goes, what is this vegetable?
It's theater of the mind, so the people can picture Ezzy shirtless eating a hamburger.
Well, I think we need to do
more like theater of the absurd,
or we'll do some Instagramming of it or something.
Maybe do that too. And anyways, we'll be on next week. We're taking calls, then we're gonna be off for a few weeks enjoying our summers, seeing our families. You know, that'll be a nice treat
for the record
us.
We will still be updating illegalcurve.com on a daily basis, so please go there for all your latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba
and then
news.
we'll be back Labor Day weekend, so you get something to look forward to at that point in time. I expect the Bombers will be 11-0 at that point in time based on
they'll never lose again.
Exactly. I should make mention, of course, this segment, because we're talking about something funny, brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. For over 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Just announced yesterday, a concert series event. If you're a fan of the television show Silicon Valley, if you're a fan of really a litany of movies too many for me to name, T.J. Miller.
He's great.
Going to be at Rumors September 26th through the 28th. Tickets, I have from reliable source, tickets are going super quickly. Get them now. Don't miss out. You might miss out. Get your tickets now. RumorsComedyClub.com.
And T.J. Miller, of course, is the cousin of Vancouver Canucks forward J.T. Miller.
That's right. They just switched the names around. It's exactly right. That's it for this Saturday morning. We'll get to the Neil and Lucci trade next week, I guess. Whatever. The devil mascot ran through a window, people. That's it for the Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN Radio 1290. Big thanks to our guests, Emily Kaplan, John Forsland, and Bill Hoppe. In case you missed any of the show, it's available for download on our website, illegalcurve.com. It's on tsn1290.ca. It's wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe, rate, review, let us know what you think. Do that so that we can know how you think of the show. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, and Zappia Group Realty. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean Asor for joining us, for doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuke, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.